stand by.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen. This is show number 38, and we're recording on an evening, which is unusual for us, or unusual for me. I guess it is only Gretchen's second time. Gretchen, you're brave enough to do this another time?
I'm going to try it, and I'll watch my microphone technique tonight.
Oh, quit. The first lesson of microphone technique is quit bumping into it.
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to let everybody know, if you guys want to leave a voicemail comment to us that we'll probably play, the phone number is 206-888-4851. The observant listener will notice that's not the same phone number that we had, that we actually have on the website, because I haven't updated the website yet. That phone number expired to us for some reason. I think IT Conversations took it. So, oh well. Nobody called when we were during the show for a while. And if you don't use it, I think you have a month with these K7 phone numbers. If you don't use it, then you lose it. So we've got a new number. I'm going to repeat that again. That's 206-888-4851, and we would love to hear from you. And talking about loving to hear from our listeners, I do have an email sent. Let me get that in my little queue here. We have a comment from Ofer Benari, one of our listeners. And remember last week, I guess 2 weeks ago, we were talking about first date mistakes made by men and made by women.
Mainly men.
Yeah, and I don't really have too much experience with that because I've never made a mistake on a first date. But I know others have, I've heard. All right, his take on this, were things women do to screw up a first date. One, putting on makeup or more makeup in the car. Doesn't like that.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Telling you about her C-section. asking you to come upstairs and meet my folks.
Okay, ladies, that's horrible. What are you thinking? It's a first date. It's like an interview.
I had that happen. I had that happen like on a second date.
And what'd you do? Turn around and ran?
Well, you know, how can you? That's what you want to do. Last one is wondering what to name a child she would have with Brad Pitt. Now, for those of you that remember the Jeff and Pat show, Pat was obsessed with Brad Pitt. So I could imagine her having that conversation on a first date. So Pat, if you're listening, probably not a good idea. Now, there's also, let me get to this. I have a lot of stuff here, so it's hard to get it's hard to like find the right pages. I made a little code for myself though. This is from a blog called Kissin' Blog, and if you guys haven't seen this blog, I recommend it. It's written by, I think the guy's in Sydney and the woman is in the Midwest someplace. They're friends, but they write about their dating experiences, and they're both really good writers and pretty insightful. So the guy's name is Wombat. Apparently they want to do this in secret. And it just so happens that he had recently had a date, and it was awful, and he shared reasons why. This is a first date. All right, number one, she was late. 25 minutes late, which she breezily dismissed with a wave of her hand, saying, "Oh, it's one of my defining characteristics. I'm always late." And his response was, "Define this, sweetheart." No, I don't know if that made sense, but anyway, didn't like that too much. Second thing is political rant. Out of nowhere came a diatribe of such extreme length and complexity, it took me the remainder of my martini to recover. I was contemplating shagging you, darling, not voting for you. The third one was ingratitude. Cocktails, dinner, drinks, and 3 hours of my rapt attention. Perhaps a thank you at some point would be appropriate.
Yeah.
Nope. Not then, and not the next day.
Oh, that's just rude.
That's just
anybody's rude if they can't say thank you.
Yeah, no kidding. So anyways, he was saying that one obvious insight, that was his wrap-up, one obvious insight is that a sense of humor will tell you more about someone than pretty much anything else. This girl had none and was barely even able to muster a smile. I think if someone looks for fun, it's a telltale sign about their optimism. I don't know, do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you can't laugh on a first date, especially because it's so difficult and usually pretty awkward,
yeah,
then it's not going to get any better. So you just better relax and try to have fun.
Yeah. So you think there's a lot that you can see in somebody from a, their sense of humor.
Most people look for humor. I mean, that's one of the number one characteristics everybody wants. Somebody who makes them laugh and has a good time with them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was set up on a blind date about a year ago. And with a group of friends, they thought, oh, you and this other girl will get along great. You know, you're both very similar, right? And they hadn't seen this girl themselves for about a year or so. So we get there, and, you know, we get there. I think there's like five of us.
The group went with you?
Yeah, it was a setup. Yeah, it was it was kind of a, you know,
a group setup. So they were going to watch.
They were going to watch the interaction.
Oh, that's even more nerve-wracking.
But, you know, I was fine with it. And we were having a good time, just laughing and joking. And then she came in, and there was no smiles. There was no, and keep and bear in mind, this woman hadn't seen this other group of friends for about a year. You'd think, oh, wow, a lot to catch up on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was, and maybe she just took one look at me and, you know, was so bummed or disappointed or something. It could be, but still, it seems like you'd be able to muster a conversation. She was awful, and then about a half an hour later, she ducked out because she had to go tend to her dog.
Maybe that's what she's been doing for a year, kind of hiding out with the dog. Yeah, Sounds like the social skills are a little rusty.
Yeah, 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 no kidding. I mean, her friends even said, a week later, I think I asked, so what, you know, have you heard from her? And one of my friends said, no, I don't think we ever will again.
You made such an impression, Jeff.
I don't, to be honest with you, I mean, I don't think it had much to do with me at all. But it was just amazing. How can you socialize like that? It's just kind of rude.
Mm-hmm. That was rude.
Yeah.
That was very rude.
So, that's a little continuation from last week. A little continuum.
Well, we could jump into my five signs for this week.
Okay, let's do that.
Since we're on that theme.
Five signs. Good.
Yeah, these are five signs that you should not be dating, especially if you're a man old enough to know better. Now, I don't necessarily know if these are of true women, but you can certainly pipe in
on
your experience. So, guys, you shouldn't be dating if, first of all, you're separated and you haven't started divorce proceedings. I can't tell you how many of my friends have the horror stories about going out with a man they find out later is married. And that's just really not a great thing.
I have, you know what? I have a lot of friends that have girls that have had the same experience.
Right, but how often do you meet a woman who's secretly married and out there dating?
I've never.
I just don't think it happens. I think it's a uniquely man trait, and it's a bad one, guys.
Yeah, and I think the men too think they're full of big promises, right? It's like, yeah, we're getting separated.
Right, we are separated.
We're going to get divorced, and then, you know, a year later, yeah, we're still working on it. Got to find the right time. Right. And I've heard these stories.
So get this. I talked to a guy who'd been married 16 years, and 3 weeks ago, his wife said she wanted a divorce, and they were still in the same house, and they had three kids, and he was trying to date. Now, there's something majorly wrong with that. I wished him a lot of luck, because that just wasn't going to happen in my world.
Did he ask you out?
Mm-hmm. So.
And after a few dates, you.
No. All right. And the second sign you shouldn't be dating is if you haven't thought about the five stages of grief, which really any kind of previous relationship is a loss, such as a death, but even a serious relationship. And I just think a lot of guys don't realize that you have to go through all five of them, and they pretty much get hung up after the second one, maybe.
Do you know what the five steps are?
What are they? First one is denial and isolation, when you're really basically sad and you withdraw.
See, that never happens to me.
You skip right on to what? Two? Anger?
No, that was kind of a joke. You know, it's denial. Using my denial, too.
Oh, sorry. Went right over my head.
Very subtle humor there.
Then the second one's anger. You get angry at either the person who's left or has departed.
Okay.
The third one, you bargain. You sort of bargain with God. You know, if I do this, will you make it feel better?
Will you give her back to me?
Yeah. And then you're depressed, and then you accept. And unless you get to the acceptance part, you're really not in any kind of state to actually be out there dating. And
right.
I just find that most people, and it takes some time. And, you know, psychologists say it's half the amount of time that you were with the previous person.
You know what? I've heard that before. And I don't know if I heard that before or I made that up and then I heard it. But I'll tell you what, I looked at my past and that's about right.
Yeah, that is about right.
Yeah.
And so the longer you're with somebody, the harder it is to disengage. So if you're just out there to have sex, well, maybe you should be looking, you know, not to date, but to actually go do that.
Right.
But it's just, it takes some time.
But how do you recognize that in a guy?
you pretty much ask, how long has it been since you've been separated or it's been over?
Okay.
And then I always try to figure out if they've, which is my third point, if they've done any work on themselves, because chances are, even if somebody totally left you, there's some contribution you made to it. And are you really thinking about that? And you're trying to figure out how you do things better and not get bitter about it and not bring a whole lot of baggage into a new relationship.
Right.
And that's hard to do. But I'll tell you, in certain states, it's a lot easier. Like California, for example, everybody does it. And if you don't do it, you're weird. But,
yeah.
You know.
You mean like getting help?
Yeah, you talk to a therapist. Right?
Right.
If you get a trainer, you're going to get a therapist. It's just very common.
Right. Maybe you can get the same person to do both.
Maybe. And very real.
Oh, see, that would be efficient time. You could go work
that's
out
right.
and get
and you
your
can be talking
counseling.
To them at the same time. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
That's right. And then I think the fourth sign, which I thought this was really pretty interesting, there could be trouble in bed. And often I've had the experience where guys would say, oh, it's because of the past relationship and they're not still feeling very good about it. But I didn't realize this, that half of men over 40 have erectile dysfunction. And I think I've got to wonder, is that statistics true 20 or 50 years ago? Or is it now we're just hearing about it because of all the marketing associated with Viagra and Cialis, and it's all been hyped now, and you all want to know how many guys over 40 are having trouble? And, you know, if you can't talk about it with, you know, your new relationship, then it's probably not time to be doing it. So
I find that hard to believe. Half?
Half.
I could believe if you told me half men in their 60s, but
no,
40 seems kind of young.
Over 40.
Well, I'm speaking as someone in my 40s.
I should
40s
probably
and,
go
you know,
check
and,
where I got that statistic, but I will say that it's it was published, and I'm not making it up.
Wow. So any of you out there that are over 40 and have erectile problems, go ahead and phone into the show. We'd like to...
Yes, we really need to talk about that more.
We'd like to talk about that
and
more.
And last, my last comment would be anybody who constantly compares an old relationship with the new.
Right.
By
definition, that's Seth Rude,
anyways. By definition, they're supposed to be new, and new is exciting and different. So, guys, give it a chance and stop comparing.
Right. I think that's a very good point.
So those are my five. Now, I don't know if women are really guilty of that, too.
No, there's been some women that sort of talk. I mean, there's a gray line between talking about your ex a little bit, you know.
Right.
And there's one hand, you want to hear a little bit of how that experience went and so forth.
Right. And that gives you an idea where they are emotionally, too.
It gives you an idea where they are emotionally, and it gives you a window into their personality to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody talks about their ex a little bit more than you think they should, I think that's the red flag. It's like, okay, maybe not a little bit dwelling on that one too much still. And,
right.
And it's okay. It's okay to dwell, but maybe you don't need somebody in your life.
Go talk to another friend, but not somebody you're trying to start a new relationship with.
Right. Exactly right.
So that was all I had for personal opinion. Everything else I have to talk about is real fact, and it's not all gloom and doom. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can take you when you're not gloom and doom. All right, well, as long as we're talking about dating, let me just take one more topic, and then we'll go into your gloom and doom stuff.
Okay,
do you remember, Gretchen, 20 years ago, Newsweek came out with this big thing about women and single women, especially educated women in marriage? They came out with a number of statistics, okay? What they concluded at that time was college-educated women who failed to marry in their 20s had abysmal odds of ever tying the knot.
Correct.
What they said was, let's see, if they remained single at 30, they had about a 20% chance of getting married. By 35, it dropped down to 5%. And the story said if you're 40 years old, you had a more likely chance to be killed by a terrorist. And that was before the 9/11 stuff. It's probably a little politically insensitive. But I think
so that was in 86. That was 20 years ago.
That was in 86, yeah. Now, 20 years later, they have come out and said that was just completely wrong.
Wow.
So a lot of people are breathing a sigh of relief. Oh, yes, I've been waiting. Now I can get married, finally.
The statistics are in my favor.
That's right. So today it appears that about 90% of baby boomer men and women, which is really the ones in that category, either have married or will marry, a ratio that's well in line with actually historical averages. Let's see here. It says at least when... the days when half of all women would marry by 20, as they did in 1960, only look more anachronistic. I don't know what that word means, so just...
It means outdated and old.
Outdated, okay. At least 14% of women born between 55 and 64 are married after the age of 30. Today, the median age for the first marriage is 25 for women and 27 for men. It's higher than ever before. Now, in 1996, they took some census data. So this was, what, 10 years ago?
10 years ago. Mm-hmm.
They said a single woman at 40 had a 40.8% chance of eventually marrying. And today, they think that the odds of that are even higher. So,
whoa, women.
Yeah. Now, the story...
Way to go.
The story goes into a lot more, and it goes into some individual stories, because apparently they covered like 15 women or so in the original article. Mm-hmm. They tracked back to all those 15 women, and basically all but two were married and married happily, and the two that weren't married had made that decision just simply not to get married. So the ones that got married, none of them were divorced, and the article kind of goes on to say, actually, where they were putting down women with higher educations, or not putting them down, but saying there's a less chance of getting married.
Right.
Now, not only do they seem to have a better chance of getting married than women who were not educated, but they also have a more of a tendency, especially marrying older, to have marriages that actually last, and that's what they're showing. So that's very interesting.
I would agree with that. I think you stand a better chance if you wait and get married older.
Right. And the other thing that's happening demographically is they're saying the politics of sex is becoming a lot less. So the successful woman in maybe, you know, maybe not 20 years, well, maybe 20 years ago, maybe even 40 years ago would be even more, would certainly intimidate a lot of men. But today, what they're finding is a lot of successful women are finding the starving artist kind of guy to get together with, or just somebody that doesn't make as much. And it's not as important. Sometimes the man takes more household roles.
Right.
And
as I mentioned last time, they have to be attractive, because women are starting to have the double standard that men have, because they're able to go out on their own and afford to pay for themselves and take care of themselves.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. In fact, I know some couples where the guy stays at home and the woman works. And, you know, so it's interesting.
It's very common in Sweden, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the women's, the quote was interesting. So I'm going to repeat her quote. She's 47. Again, they tracked her since she was 27. She married a man she'd known for years. She was always happily single. Today, she says she revels in having a travel companion, someone to talk to when they're both awake at 3 a.m., someone to love unconditionally who'll love her back. And her quote is, "I married a fabulous man and I'm crazy about him. And being blissfully married is better than being blissfully single." But not by that much. And I thought that was interesting. But here's the image. So I thought, okay, well, that makes sense. But she actually called back several days later to the interviewer and said that part about marriage being only a little bit better, she lied. Being married is really a lot better, she said.
Aww.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe she had pressure from her husband. What did you tell them?
Yeah, really.
Go back and correct that. Our friends are going to be reading this.
That's
what do you
right.
mean a little bit over better than being single? And anyway, so that's that.
Well, that's very interesting. Good news for women. Although, you know, you have to wonder how many women would really say, "Wow, I'm never getting married because the statistic says that I won't."
Oh, I know a lot of them.
No. Okay.
People who believe in statistics. No, I forgot to mention one of the other obvious conclusions. And I got to say, 20 years ago, I remember when this came out. And I remember some, you know, of our girlfriends, they would be like, you know, a little bit, oh, my God. You know, they weren't making marriage decisions based on it, but they're a little worried. But I remember even thinking then what one of the conclusions of this article was. And it said, if you, no matter what age you are, if you want to get married, if you want to have that lifestyle, chances are extremely high that you will, you know? And so I thought that was good.
The very thought of you makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. And you appear in all your splendor, my one and only love. The shadows fall and...
Let's switch gears and go to one of Gretchen's serious topics.
No, it's not serious.
One of Gretchen's fun
topics. Non-serious
topics.
Well, The past 2 weeks have been kind of a challenge for me because I've been out of touch from regular news source and my regular routine for getting the news, and I've been like a news junkie for 25 years. And I moved, so I haven't had my TV hooked up or my internet hooked up, and I can get like news, I guess, in the car or when I'm in the car, like 20 minutes a day. But I was sort of wondering, so what have I really missed and what's really the effect on me? And if you're ever outside of your normal routine and you try something different, like for example, on Sunday I found out that I missed that Al-Qaeda planned to gas the New York subways, and a Yellowstone tourist died, and an elevator crushed a child, and there was a mid-air plane crash and the pilot died in an air show. And so there, you know, those are all the... Those are all the
they're all the things that make life
story.
Better.
Yeah, they are, but they're also clutter when you think about it, because
the Yellowstone woman was very interesting. She was like 47 years old, and
she fell, right?
She was trying to get a better position, a better angle on something, I think, to take a picture, and she took a 500-foot tumble.
Oh, wow.
I know.
That Kodak photo spot wasn't so good.
Not so good.
Not so good. So I guess I was just wondering, what does it mean when people don't follow the news? And I tend to think that that's what makes our voting public apathetic, because I really had no vested interest in what was going on these past 2 weeks, because I was all wrapped up in myself and all the various things that I was doing. And so I wasn't paying attention to the things that maybe my lawmaker should be taking.
It was all about you. Tell you what you missed. You missed votes. You missed votes on gay marriage. You missed votes on the flag amendment.
No. I did catch
you missed a resolution by Congress the Senate spent a whole day coming up with a resolution, and this resolution said, this is just last Thursday, they support our troops.
Well,
what the hell are we paying these guys for? I'm sorry.
And I know we're at $400 billion in Iraq now, but that's the one thing that I haven't been hearing, the daily update on Iraq. And, you know, is that bad or good? I'm going to tell you, the last 2 weeks, it's been actually pretty refreshing. And, yeah, I feel bad for our troops, knowing especially that I see the two were killed. And
murdered. Butchered and all that.
But I just have to say, is ignorance bliss, or is it actually a very nice thing to not have your life cluttered up with these things that I can't do anything about? The toddler that was crushed to death with the elevator. I mean, I can't change it, but am I better off knowing about it or not knowing about it?
Well, you know, what's interesting about this topic is, if I went to CNN.com, is a lot of times where I get my online news. I'll go to the different news sites, but now they have two tabs. They've got, you know, important stories, right? Top news, right? Mm-hmm. And the next tab over is most popular stories.
Right. I've seen that.
And it's very revealing. Most popular stories are the human interest. That's where I found the Yellowstone.
Right.
That's where I found the elevator thing.
The kitten was playing with the boa constrictor.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's
popular.
All that stuff is. So that leads to the conclusion of that maybe a lot of people out there are reading news to be a voyeur or to be entertained.
That's right. It's all about entertainment, I think.
Yeah, know? Yeah. And how important
is it? And when you look at who voted on American Idol versus who votes for their Congress people,
right.
That's what's frightening. That is what's really, really frightening. When you get a 25% voter turnout, you know, and then American Idol gets, 500 million votes?
Right. Right. Well, there is a thread in one of my podcasting bulletin boards that I kind of keep up with, and I'm a nerd. I moderate these things too. And they were talking about the global warming movie with Al Gore. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that yet.
I haven't seen it, but I will say, when he spoke on Jay Leno, I thought he was amazingly good. And he was always so dry when he was running for president. But when he talked about a topic he was really interested in, he was really, I was glued to my chair to listen to him, which is unbelievable to say that about Al Gore.
Yeah. You just dropped your stuff, didn't you? She was so excited about Al Gore.
No. It's all back together.
We need to cover that up with production, with fake stuff.
So what were you saying about Al?
Yeah. So anyway.
You saw the movie.
I saw it.
Did you like it?
Oh, it was fantastic. It's a very important movie. I mean, in a way, and Al Gore does a great job, but in a way it's bad that it's Al Gore, mm-hmm. because he's a political figure. And so
everybody's going to say, it's a Democratic issue.
Yeah.
And it's not a Democratic issue. People who live in the world issue.
So there was this thread, and a lot of and people were talking about this, and this one guy, and I don't mean to pick on this one guy. I don't even know his real name. His moniker is Hitman. You know, whatever. But he's like this conspiracy guy. You know, he says, oh, all this stuff is fake. It's, you got to look at, I mean, he makes a good point. You got to look at the source of the information. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's got an agenda, blah, blah, blah. Right. But he's just fighting against the concept. And a lot of scientists, people who are really actually are scientists by day, have pointed out one thing that's interesting. And this is very, very eye-opening. It says, as Al Gore said in the movie, all scientists pretty much agree that this climate is changing.
Correct.
And they're even saying it's because of humans and greenhouse gases and carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. That they're saying that. The science community is absolutely in agreement with that. Now, if you read the media about global warming, they don't say that. They come up with slightly different conclusions. And so the media warps what the scientific community says. And I find that very interesting. So you don't always, just by reading a USA Today article about global warming, doesn't necessarily give you every single fact. Sometimes they're biased. And so this guy was just...
Well, the movie was how long? An hour and a half? Two hours?
I think about an hour and a half.
And that's how long it took to build a compelling case, right?
Right. Right, exactly.
So do you think there could be an hour and a half of rebuttal to it? I mean, do you think somebody else could put out the opposite side that, no, that's not true?
Well, they should if they believe that.
If they really believe in it, right.
But, you know, you got to have facts.
Right.
I mean, a lot of us sort of like facts. And
did you see the 60 Minutes?
Versus conjecture. I don't believe in global warming.
Right.
You know, okay, come on.
Did you see that when 60 Minutes covered this before the movie came out and they talked to the chief NASA scientist who said his report was constantly edited by the White House lawyers?
Yeah.
they didn't want to lead to any conclusion, so these lawyers would rewrite everything this man wrote, so he ultimately quit. And he's probably one of the ones that's quoted in the documentary.
I think they did bring that up in the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody should see that. It's not a political issue, and there does seem to be this tinge around that this is a Democratic issue and the Republicans are denial, and I think that was led by sort of Bush, you know, mm-hmm. sort of. But I don't understand what's on the political agenda, why that would be so. I guess the Republicans don't want to have any restrictions to business or car makers and stuff. Maybe that's what the thing is. They don't want to,
oil.
Place restrictions on the stuff. So mm-hmm. maybe that's where the politics come in. But it's really not a political issue at all. But anyways, towards your point, does it really matter if we just get out of the news? I know that sometimes you can take a week vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Greece once with a group of friends in an island where we had no communications whatsoever. And we were driving along one time, you know, halfway during the week, and somebody stopped us at the gas station, this Greek man. He couldn't speak much English, but he said, "Princess Di, dead, crash.
Wow.
We were like, come on, this is ridiculous. And we went back, and it took 2 days before we could finally get, like, a radio article about it. But, I don't know. It did feel kind of good being away from the news. But I think after a certain time, didn't you want to come back and know what's going on?
I really can't wait to get my TV hooked up, honestly, because, yes, I would really like to know what's going on. But I think that's only because that's how I was trained. But I know there's people, I've met a lot of people, and they just don't have any interest in the news. They don't want to know.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't concern them, really.
Yeah.
You know, it really doesn't, unless maybe there's a thunderstorm or, you know, a hailstorm coming your way and it could damage you, or a hurricane. I mean, it really doesn't concern them.
You know, even when you look at the amount of money the government is in debt right now, this should be a huge issue. Social Security should be a huge concern.
Mm-hmm.
The problems are, it's just not as tangible, is it? I mean, the politicians are saying, look at this money, our grandkids are going to pay for it. Well, maybe some people are going to say, I'm not going to have grandkids, or to hell with them.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't say that, but it's just not tangible. It's not, I don't see any change in my life. So what if we're, you know, $100 trillion in debt or whatever we are? I don't have that number right, but so what? How does it affect me? And it's not so obvious, but it will be very obvious
very soon.
And I think we're all sort of knowledgeable about that. So,
I think right when I turn 65, it will be bankrupt. Social Security will be bankrupt. Right,
yeah.
Right, smack dab on that.
So we're not going to get our $2,000 a year?
No, I won't get my $2,000 a year that I've been putting in since I was 16. You know?
I know.
It's not fair.
That's not fair.
Not fair.
And, you know, I actually gave Bush credit. I mean, I hate to do this, but I actually gave him credit at the beginning of his term this time for saying, and I didn't necessarily agree with his idea for fixing it, but I at least gave him credit for putting this issue that nobody really wants to solve because no matter what you come up with, it's politically unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
At least he put it on the table, and I thought, well, that takes some balls,
and
that's cool.
Down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it went nowhere. Right. Like I said, I didn't necessarily agree with his idea, but I saw room for compromise.
Right.
But
don't forget when Clinton of I did not have sexual relations with that woman fame left office, there was no debt. If you do remember, we had a surplus.
Oh, I know.
And how many years ago was it? Six?
Not very long ago.
So, I mean, it was just, that's what gets me.
Yeah.
So the $400 billion that's in Iraq now that we've committed to, we're all going to be paying for it, especially if you have children. They'll be paying for it too.
Yeah. And all we can hope is that in the same time frame, 20 or 30 years from now, that this will all have been to some benefit.
Mm-hmm. And maybe
it will be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not enough of a soothsayer. I just hope, you know. What I feel about this, you know, the Democrats now are saying we need the troops to get out. And the Republicans are kind of saying, well, they're going to stay in and do this. What I really feel, Gretchen, and this is just what I get from the news. I'm not an expert. So I kind of feel we either need to get out or put three times the number of troops in there and get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the current level of troops is really doing anything. I mean, they're all brave and they're fighting hard. And gosh, I give them credit. But it doesn't seem that they've got the number of forces to sort of bring stability to the region, which I think is what the goal is. So... you know.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So either we finish the job or we let the Iraqis finish it.
Yeah.
Excuse the bitching. I shouldn't complain. I should have a feeling. This feeling.
How about something lighter?
Okay. How about lighter? How about orgasms?
Oh.
I do. I have a thing about orgasms.
Okay.
Shall we talk?
Yeah. All right.
This is mostly for women.
Well, how generous of you.
Well, you know. Let's see. Okay. James Couch. He is in the neurology department. He's chairman of the neurology department at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. Has famously described what his peers call the couch treatment for migraine headaches. Couch has found that some people's migraine headaches go away when they have the big O.
Really?
Yes. Now, the reason he never tried to, you know, I wonder what the effect of a migraine headache is on an orgasm. A lot of times science doesn't work that way, and who would ever have thought to postulate that in the first place? So he didn't. But what he was doing a study for a drug company on migraine migraine solutions, and you happen to talk to a 40-year-old woman who said, if I can have a good banging orgasm, it could stop my migraines cold. And it caused this couch guy to kind of scratch his head. I'll probably get kind of excited and say, call me next time you have a migraine. But anyways, so he started asking the other people in the study about that. And he found that a good 20% of the women definitely said, if I have an orgasm during a migraine, then it's gone. And so he started doing a little bit of study on this, and I don't have all the details on that, but he's found that there is some biological reasons for this, and it has to do with serotonin levels and so forth and so on. It's not a foolproof way to get rid of a migraine. It's only 20%, but he did find that 20% number to be fairly consistent across studies. So it's very interesting, but it also comes to another mind. It's like, why, if you're having a migraine headache, why are you having sex?
Well, I was going to say, it's really hard to think about anything.
Do that?
Right. I mean, for those of us who get migraines, it's almost impossible to even think straight, let alone enjoy anything. You know?
I would think so. I've never had a migraine, knock on wood, where's the wood around here? But I've had friends that have had migraines. Yeah. And I can't imagine them saying, now is probably a good time to have sex.
Yes. It would have to be a very generous giver of orgasm to enjoy that, but
right.
That's something to keep in mind. I wonder if they'll try to sell that over the counter. Sure, orgasm in a box.
Orgasm in a box, eh? I'm sure in 10 years we will not have, we'll have no reason to actually, get together anymore. They'll have
that's
virtual
right.
orgasms.
Right. Well, there is something out there called Head On, so maybe that's related to it. That's for your migraine.
All right.
Yeah. Actually, supposedly it goes on your head, and it's natural.
Oh, okay.
It's helped a bit, actually. So I actually wanted to not talk about orgasms, but how about childhood?
Moving from orgasms to what?
Childhood.
To childhood.
Childhood, yeah.
I never had an orgasm in childhood.
Well.
By the way, remember last show I said, I think I had the first time I had sex was I was 19 years old. I was talking to my mom today, or yeah, not today, yesterday. And she goes, Jeff, I don't want to know that. So she was starting to think, now, where was Jeff when he was 19 years old? So, Mom, I know you're listening, so I'll try to be a good boy.
All right, back to childhood.
So back to childhood.
Back to childhood. Okay, so do you remember when you were a kid? Did you ever ride your bike with a bike helmet?
No.
Right. Did you ever have a set of lawn darts? Your family?
I don't think we did, but we had friends that did.
Right. Did you have flame retardant PJs?
I remember I burned my sister's one, so no. No, I didn't. When she was in them. I used to have three sisters, but now it's two.
Oh,
it was sad. I cried. I felt bad.
Did you ever sit in a car seat? Do you remember?
No.
I don't remember sitting in a car seat either.
We didn't have car seats.
I don't remember car seats.
No.
Did you ever play with your sister's Easy Bake Oven and, like, touch the light bulb?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, okay. All those things happened, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, because that's how old we are.
And we liked it just fine.
And we liked it, and somehow we survived childhood. But what I'm getting at here is that... the toy industry is a $21 billion industry, and video games are another $10 billion, but most people don't realize that 85% of toys in this country are manufactured in China, but they're tested to very specific mechanical and physical standards that are dictated by the Code of Federal Regulations and enforced by the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
And are they typically tested where they're made, like in China?
No, they can be tested there, but there's labs all over tested the same standards.
Okay.
And things that toys are tested for example, are small parts, sharp points, use and abuse tests, flammability, sound levels, lead and heavy metals, labeling, even a poly bag thickness. If a poly bag is too thick, it can be a strangulation hazard.
Did you say heavy metal?
Yes, I did say heavy metal, Jeff. You just inject the humor. You just inject the humor.
Rad, man.
And there's all types of toys are tested. Everything from rattles and cribs and car seats and bikes and helmets and marbles.
Now, are we talking about U.S. standards? Or are these are there global standards as well?
Yeah, every country has its own
every
set of standards.
Every country has its own set. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But the United States definitely has its set of standards. And in the last 30 years, the Consumer Product Safety Commission would say that all these amazing standards have helped decrease the number of deaths by 30% over 30 years, deaths and injuries. So, and it's not just in toys, but it's everything that the CPSC regulates, which includes power tools and cigarette lighters and household chemicals. But they say that all this regulation has really helped us over 30 years.
Okay.
And what I'm getting to is that there is something that you may be hearing a lot about now because it is getting a lot of press, and it's a toy called Magnetix, and it is made by a company called RoseArt, and over the past probably 4 years, they've been very, very successful with this toy. It's a building toy, and that's what it looks like, so maybe you can help me describe it. It's 1/2-inch steel balls that attach to plastic rods that are magnetized on the inside, and so it's for children. They're all different types of sets, but primarily
so
it's for children.
These magnetic balls act as connectors to some of the...
They're the connectors.
It's like the glue, if you will,
right.
for the
so
different structures.
You can build structures like castles, or you can build an Empire State Building, or you can just do freeform building.
Yeah, it looks like a cool sort of version of a Legos type of thing.
Right, but it's for definitely children that are older, ages 6 and up.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on right now is there's been a massive recall. A 20-month-year-old child was actually killed and died by ingesting two of these steel marbles. And it was sort of a fluke that he ingested two of them, and it causes intestines to they stuck together in his intestines, and it caused a blockage that wasn't diagnosed in time, and he died.
Oh.
So, but you can clearly see on the box that there is the warning that says that this toy is not appropriate for children under 3 years. It contains small parts.
Right.
So this product was tested to all the U.S. standards. It meets everything that there is out there that this company was supposed to do.
Right.
And yet, what's happening now is there are massive amounts of lawsuits because, and this is getting all kinds of press coverage. I know I've seen it on ABC and CNN. And the CPSC is aware of 34 incidents involving the small magnets, including one death and four serious injuries. The 20-month boy died after he swallowed the two magnets, and it created the blockage. The other three children from ages 3 to 8 had intestinal perforations that required surgery, and a 5-year-old child aspirated two magnets and had them removed from his lungs. So these little magnetic balls are getting into the hands of children that they're really not appropriate for. But what is happening is that there are now class action lawsuits that are going on against this manufacturer. And if you actually go to any kind of Google or type in Rosart lawsuit or magnetics lawsuit,
yeah.
There are just class action suit after class action suit that you can join. And so
why are there class action suits? I mean that assumes that, hey, if you have this, go ahead and get onto the suit, even if your kid hasn't had a problem.
Right. Well, they're trying to say that Rosart was alerted about the dangers and didn't take enough steps, that they didn't take the appropriate steps and they didn't make the CPSC aware in time to say that, you know, these are... that if you have this in a house that has a child younger than 3, that you really need to keep them out of that house. And they're really making what I think is a pretty lame case, because I am in the toy manufacturing side of things, and I know this company has gone through everything that it was supposed to go through. And I just have to ask, you know, where's parental responsibility? Because we grew up in this world where we didn't even have bike helmets or car seats. And yes, it's awful that this child died, but at one point, does the parent say, I wasn't watching him, and that's why he ate 2 marbles.
Yeah, but we don't live in that society anymore. We don't take responsibility for anything. Nothing is our fault.
That is true.
It's all somebody else's fault.
Interesting website called Overlawyered, and they clearly are talking about this. And it's just one of the lawyers for the suing parents are saying, we want to make these companies think twice the next time they are tempted to put profits before the lives of innocent children. Well, this company did think a lot, because the amount of testing that goes through before you can even get the product to market is so significant. And it has been out there for years. And these 34 suits that have been, that they've gotten calls about. Maybe they should have said something earlier. I don't know the facts about how long ago they got them, but it just sort of goes to, you know, why do we pay so much for some of the things we pay for? It's because we're paying for these lawsuits. And I happen to know the owners of this company, and they have small children, and they would hate to think that they were putting something out there that would kill or hurt a child. So
that reminds me, did you ever watch Saturday Night Live when you were younger?
Yes.
Now, back when Dan Aykroyd was on the show, it was like one of the first casts, he used to play this guy that used to bring him out at Christmas time, and he was this toy manufacturer.
Yes, and the bag of glass.
The bag of broken glass.
Bag of glass. Come on, kids, here's a good toy for you.
That's what that reminds me of. Now, that was just good fun. Mm-hmm. I had a couple. My parents gave me a bag of glass when I was younger. I was a bad boy.
Or the lawn darts. Did you take them and throw them at your sister?
No, I do remember, though, when I was young, I think I stuck like a branch into some guy's ear. So, it doesn't take any special toys to do destruction to people.
Oh, my.
So what's your conclusion on all this?
My conclusion is that...
Are we over-lawyered?
We are totally over-lawyered. And the parents have to say, you know what? We made a mistake here, and I'm sorry our son is dead. But so are they really saying that you're supposed to not have this item in any home where there's a child under 8, and now an 8-year-old can't play with it because...
And from what I saw, it looks like one of those very creative toys. It's one of the good toys, not one of those stupid,
It is a good toy. I mean, it's available on, home shopping and...
But is the liability really on the manufacturer and
yes.
not on one of these testing agencies? I mean, the
no.
testing agency said, okay, this is good to go.
Yes.
And the companies did everything in regulation that they were supposed to do.
Correct.
So what gives? Clearly, the testing wasn't either done properly or the specifications for that testing was not
right,
proper.
Because right now, all the it did
that's
pass
not
all
the,
manu- the current
That's
tests.
Not the manufacturer's fault.
Right.
So it seems like it's directed at the wrong people.
So now the Toy Industry Association, which is the industry's trade group, has actually had to publish something on their website to tell parents a consumer advisory about magnets. I mean, can you believe this? This is a magnet. We all had them in science class, but we have to have a
when they get into the intestines,
advisory.
They stick together.
That's
so don't
right.
have two. If you got to, if you really want to digest one, mm-hmm. just one.
Just one.
Not two. That's
one,
when you get into intestinal
one,
difficulties.
One will pass, two will not.
Two will stick. Because they're magnets.
Oh, gosh. Shouldn't be laughing, but I just thought we had to talk about that because it's just insane in my mind.
Insane. And you're kind of in the industry.
I am in the industry.
For those
and
that
I
don't know, Gretchen always wears an elf outfit because she indeed is a Santa's elf.
I make toys.
She makes toys. She's really busy in the November, December
time
frame.
I won't be able to do this then, Jeff. I'm going to be predisposed up north.
But really, do you have to be wearing your elf outfit now? I mean,
well, it's so bloody hot.
It's a little bit distracting. All right. Well, can I lighten it up just a little bit again? I think I've got...
That wasn't even heavy.
No, that wasn't. But, well, yeah, kids died. That's not
I'm
heavy.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, the kid did die. And that's awful. And I'm not laughing at that.
For some reason, the last 2 weeks, things about dating kind of stuck in me. So I've got another one. Okay. You know, I went to this happy hour last week. And one of the things...
The one where you got really drunk?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Mom.
Sorry, Mom. It wasn't too bad. I went to work the next morning. I was fine. So, anyways, this couple was talking about. Here's the scenario. She, the woman, was saying that she told her her best friend at the time. She saw her best friend's significant other. I think major boyfriend, maybe even fiance. I can't remember. She saw him out with somebody else, some other girl. Obviously, you know, making out and stuff like that. So she does what most people would do, and she told this friend.
Right.
Best friend. Friend for years. The friend turned on my friend and said, "You are just jealous because you don't have anybody in your life right now. You are jealous of my happiness." And she basically defriended her. And that they've never been friends again. And it turns out, of course, the guy was a slouch. And, of course, she found out, I'm sure, months later, she was in a case of denial.
She was in denial, yeah.
She was in denial. And I'm sure she probably couldn't go back to my friend because of pride or whatever issues. Like, oh, yeah, you were right. I was such a, you know, loser. But so we had a group discussion then about, well, what is the correct thing to do in that scenario? Now, what would you do? The same situation. You see one of your best girlfriends... significant other out with somebody else. Do you tell her or not?
I might talk to him, actually.
At where you see him, say hello?
No, I might make a point of calling him to say what I saw.
Okay.
And suggest that he might want to have a conversation with the girlfriend.
Oh, that's very clever.
No, not necessarily clever, but you don't want to necessarily get in the middle of the relationship. But if it is
right.
clearly your best friend, and then if he refuses to do it, then I would probably tell my best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think you've got to wear your loyalties, you know? If a friend is a friend, and wouldn't you want to know, honestly?
Right. There is the case to be made for just saying, hey, none of my business. I'm going
to
stay out of it, and hopefully it'll play out.
But to see your
out.
Friend get hurt and to know about it? No, don't you think the friend would then turn on you later on to find out, oh, my God, you saw it and you didn't tell me?
Yeah, especially if when they broke up, he sort of told her, well, I saw Gretchen,
right.
and I was making out with this girl. Yeah, that's true.
But I think giving him the benefit of talking to her first is maybe more than he deserves, but certainly that might be where I start.
Okay. I think that's a very reasonable, mature response, I have to say.
And what would you do?
Well, this is an interesting question because we sort of concluded at the table, and I think this is also, I think her husband brought out some study where they, or maybe it wasn't a study, maybe it was a radio show or something, I can't remember, but I think we kind of agreed to the fact that women probably don't tell the woman, because women are strange about that kind of news and a little bit catty sometimes. Like this girl just totally defriended a friend for making an observation and accused her of having an agenda. But you would do, and you also wouldn't talk to the girl, and probably for good reason. But
not
you would
first.
But you would approach it, right. But they said men, definitely. If I saw a guy friend of mine, without a doubt I would.
His girl out with someone else.
Yeah, without, that definitely wouldn't. I mean, I definitely would, I'm sure.
Yeah, you definitely would.
Yeah.
Tell him.
Right.
Yeah. And you don't think he would turn on you?
No, don't think so. Men aren't really that way. Now, what if it was a girlfriend of mine's? And, I mean, a friend. And I saw her significant other, who was a guy, out with somebody else. Would I tell her? I probably would. For right or for wrong, I probably would.
And she wouldn't accuse you of wanting to be with him?
Yeah, right. It would probably depend on the person, I guess, too. You know a little bit about your relationship and about their personality, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, yeah, I think it depends where they are in the relationship, too. But if it's serious.
Yeah, right.
So I think you sort of have an obligation to say something.
If they're like fiancé, they're heading
almost
to the altar.
It's newsworthy, It's just like saying, I saw Clint Eastwood at dinner the other night.
It's news, maybe. Maybe forget about telling them directly, but if they listen to the podcast,
there you go.
Use it on the podcast as a story. Well, I saw this guy, one of my great friends.
Right.
Yeah, I could do it.
Never again. Through with love, through with men. They play their game without shame. And who's to blame? I thought I'd found a man I could trust. What a bust. This is how the story ends. He's gonna turn me down and say, can't we be friends?
Yes, I thought I knew the wheat from the chaff.
Hey, so on Sunday, did you see that Paul McCartney turned 64?
When I get older, losing my hair. Mm-hmm. Do you know, if you listen to that song, his voice sounds a little bit youthful, more than the songs around that other time.
Really?
Because George Martin, the producer, sped it up just a little bit.
Wow.
They did that for effect because he wanted to sort of have that whimsical sound to it. Yeah, yes, I did see that, and I thought, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be terrible if he died when he was 64?
Yes.
And then it's like, how morbid is that song?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, so the average 64-year-old, as we talked about last time, can expect to live to be 80 today.
Okay.
So the new 64 is actually 84. And according to AARP magazine, which I just wanted to check out, that, by the way, has 35 million members, and you can start becoming a member as soon as you turn 50. So
excellent.
Lucky us. Lucky us.
I have something to look forward to in life.
Down the road. But the other thing that's happening to our fellow seniors is, wow, it seems that old folks can be just as dumb and slutty as their grandkids.
Have
you heard about this, Jeff? That in Miami, there's a gynecologist who has never seen anything like the epidemic of herpes and genital warts that she is seeing now in the retirement community.
Oh, my gosh.
More seniors with STDs than what she saw in Miami.
Wow. So I wonder if this is like after Viagra. I wonder if this is directly correlated to Viagra.
That is what one doctor thinks. It's Viagra, a lack of sex education, and no risk of pregnancy is making older folks date. And we all know that some of the hazards of dating, or at least anybody who's been through their 20s and 30s, know that you just have to watch out for those little nasty STDs.
And so it's amazing to me that not only they're dating, but they're sort of dating lots of people.
Yes.
And having sex. And see,
yes.
Again, this is a sexist thing to say, but as a man, I can see me being 84, popping some pills, getting an erection, and like, who wants some of this? A horny old man. But and maybe I'm just thinking of my grandmother and people like that. I just can't imagine women that age being like, give it to me, stud.
Well, they do.
Wanting that. I mean, I can see them wanting tenderness and holding. I can't see them wanting, intercourse. But again, I don't know what it's like being that age. So So give a call on our listener line if you're out there.
Well, here was one of the quotes. I have a single girlfriend who just broke up with a guy, and she slept with him, and she said, if I had to do it over again, I'd make him take a blood test. These are seniors talking. This is not a 25-year-old.
Wow.
So things have gotten so bad in this sleepy little community that the local medical center is going to offer sex education classes.
Oh, my gosh. Come on.
No, I'm serious.
Well, the other thing that they got going on there is there's no risk of pregnancy.
Yes.
And that's got to probably make you a little bit more, hey, let's just do it.
That's right.
Right?
That's absolutely right.
No need for a condom.
That's right.
No need to think about birth control.
Mm-hmm.
Just have at it.
Let's go to town. And they are.
And they are. And that's got to be good news. Just imagine, Gretchen. Okay, this is the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Think of what it was like 20 years ago. That wasn't happening.
No, it wasn't happening.
Just think about it 20 years from now when we start getting there.
Lives are longer, too.
Right.
That's the other thing. Is they're living longer, living healthier. So
actually, look at 40 years from now when we're there. It's going to be an orgy. It's going to be a freaking orgy.
That's true.
I can't wait.
Oh, your mom's covering her ears now.
Oops, sorry, Mom. Dang it.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams.
In life, I have a topic that this is from a blog that I really like. It's a business-focused blog. I know it's going to sound like, oh, boring story, business-focused blog. This is a blog by a fellow named Guy Kawasaki. And it kind of goes along with one of your stories about the youth and toys. But he was interviewing a woman named Kathleen Gasparini. And Kathleen Gasparini is a co-founder and senior vice president of a company called Label Networks. And Label Networks does one thing and one thing only, and apparently they're very, very good at it. They do market research and understand the dynamics of kids. Kids in that extremely important demographic between 13 and 25 years old. And they found a lot of things that I found interesting. I'll try to hit some of the highlights here. First of all, he asked her, why does MySpace and Facebook appeal so much to young people? Because these things have an enormous, enormous effect on young kids, as you probably are aware. In fact, did you just see there was a class action suit today announced against MySpace? I don't know why it's class action offhand, but some 14-year-old started it. Her parents started it saying she was sexually abused via connections she made at MySpace. So, yeah. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer to that is the appeal is that they allow for creativity, communications, and discovery among young kids. So it's kind of a way that they're obviously, they're really forming relationships via MySpace. Typically, how long does a young people fad last? They said a typical 15-year-old sense of history is about 3 years, which explains why they think things like punk rock are so cool, when actually punk rock has already been defined 20 years ago.
Right.
They do think things become classic when it's more long-term and most likely becomes a part of several aspects of youth lifestyle. An example of that is Converse sneakers. Kids associate this with punk rock, but they really don't know that it was used to be the
20 years ago
the top-notch basketball shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a real thing.
Or Izod. I mean, there's lots of labels that have made a comeback.
Right. And here's the thing I found most interesting, because they apparently do this market research all across the world. And this is some of the differences between kids in different parts of the world. First of all, in North America, 15-year-old today in North America is much different than a 15-year-old was just 5 years ago. They said before they used to say, I want my MTV. Now they want their MP3 or cell phone.
Right.
And it's not even so much having the MP3 or cell phone, but it's all about personalization with these kids. So it's a big deal to have mashup ringtones, for example. You know, I'm just an old fogey. I never saw, gee, I can't wait to get on the net and download special ringtones. Did you ever think that?
No, but it is funny to hear all different ones when you hear them go off. It is funny. Really pretty funny.
So they are really big into mashup ringtones, and they also...
What's a mashup ringtone?
A mashup ringtone is when you have like a song done in somebody else's style, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And they also have personal friends-only no texting language, for example. So it's a very do-it-yourself culture these kids are, which is kind of interesting and kind of cool and kind of creative. Now, this contrasts to Asia, specifically Japan and China, where, of course, they're very...
It's all about the phone.
They're very phone savvy, mm-hmm, and very technology savvy, but they're not as DIY. They're not as much into specialized individuality, which the Western kids are doing. They are more still... And this kind of shocked me a little bit because these cultures have always been group cultures, but the kids still have a lot of group thinking, and so they're less prone to go for individualism. The Los Angeles kid is the most entrepreneurial, culturally diverse, and creates his or her world from utilitarian means, things that inspire and surround them. So, and they're also finding this generation of 13 to 25-year-olds is more genderless, which is kind of interesting because, mm-hmm, it dovetails into what we were talking about, marriage and people are getting older and some, mm-hmm, of the politics of the gender are changing as well. But there's more assimilation across boundaries, across sports, across music, across fashion, across technology. Let's use as an example, as one of the top sports girls wants to learn other than skateboarding is football, and guys are really getting into dancing.
Wow, that's
now
interesting.
Yeah, the London kid right now isn't as hopeful, but thinks he's trendsetting in his own way. The Munich kid is more philosophical, but socially stronger than the 15-year-old kid is in LA or Palo Alto, mainly because he's not online as much, and this isn't encouraged by parents. So it's interesting. They use Addis Ababa kid. It depends on their socioeconomic level and so forth. What else here?
If you go back to the UK kid, something like 94% of them have their own TV in their own room.
Oh, really?
It's unbelievable how many children get their own TV. Did you ever grow up with your own TV? Can you imagine having your own TV?
Your family
had one television set growing up.
Yeah, we didn't have that until I was like 7 or 8 years old. It was a gift from my grandparents. So cool. We watch TV. That's pretty pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah, and to think now that if you lived in the UK, you'd be buying your kid a really nice one, too, for their room. Plus, you'd have one for yourself.
Now, how many TVs do you have in your new house?
At the moment...
Sorry, I had to ask.
At the moment, one.
Seems like every room you go into is a, hey, TV. I need to go buy more TVs. Now, you're not really a TV person. I know that, but
I'm not.
You have
I know
them for
it
your
seems
guests
funny.
And
I
so
do,
forth.
I
yeah.
do. And
so another question is, are companies defining... deluding themselves. They think they can actually create trends for young people.
Oh,
this,
they
is a,
do.
This is a
this
huge,
is huge, business.
Huge business.
This is a huge business because they have so much disposable income.
Right. And what they're saying is, but what her conclusion is, she said, you really kind of can't. You can get involved in things in MySpace. You can try to do the cool things, but these kids are savvy. If you try to directly market them, they snoot at it. They're not into it.
That's true.
It says grassroots and bottoms up is the most authentic way to go, and you can do this much faster than in the past, given the new tools that the internet provides you. But boy, if you directly market to these kids, they're onto you, and they won't buy your products.
That's true. But kids as young as two can recognize the golden arches.
That's
isn't that pathetic?
I want trans fat. Well, don't we all?
Give me French fries.
Oh, anything else interesting in this article? I think that was about it. Oh, okay, some trends. Cell phone trends among the kids. This actually didn't surprise me. The kids want, sort of one device, high-end cell phone that also has capabilities of texting, imaging, video, internet access, games, MP3, all that kind of stuff, which is exactly what I want there. So that
yeah,
doesn't
so
surprise me. Music is kind of interesting. It's progressively moving to more of a niche. So there's... What's defining music, what they think is going to happen to the kids, that they want blends. They want indie rock and punk connected. They want hip-hop's not really big into it anymore, but to some extent grunge is coming back, but grunge is coming back with a flavor of reggae and dance hall, and it's just a bizarre, kind of cool, I think, potentially. Interplay of different genres that the kids are going to be getting into lately. Fashion, they said fashion follows music and street culture from the bottom up rather than Couture. Boy, I'm having trouble. And sports, they said, because of all the major sports are having troubles right now, having, you know, just issues and drugging and all that kind of stuff, that there's not a lot of influence that sports had 20 years ago, except there might be some plateauing and some of the sort of the Gen X sports that were big, like surfing, skateboarding, snowboarding, but they're kind of peaking out. So she didn't really know what to talk about with respect to sports. And that's about it. So, and that's where the money is in the future. So it's kind of a big topic. I found that very interesting.
Well, speaking of music and the influence, have you heard about the new website that's launching called MOG.com? M-O-G.com?
No, I haven't.
Well, you're probably going to like this, because with the growth of MySpace that you were just mentioning, there's these new niche, specific topic communities springing up, and this one is music-focused. Huh. And so you're going to go there and be able to create your own web page, and you can share your music preferences and your current playlist, and then you can find other people that have similar interests. And there's a downloadable MOG-O-Matic software plugin that lets you search for digital music collections, and there's an obligatory photo album and blogging, so you can write it there,
now,
too.
With all due respect, it doesn't sound new. It sounds like what a lot of these Web 2.0 sites have been doing, things like the MySpaces and their generation of products.
This one is actually geared, I think, for children.
Really?
Yes, I think it is, because I got this off of a site that tells you what's happening in trends for children, and it's been funded by venture capitalists, so at some point they're actually thinking about taking it public, but the beta version will be available, so if you want to go check it out, it's MOG.com, M-O-G, and
I have no interest in create a playlist
so
and
share
it with other people. I mean, you can do that in iTunes right now. I have no interest. It just seems so young.
Well, we'll see what it looks
like. It's interesting.
Like, because they actually got a lot of money to get it going.
All right. Well, it's worth taking a look at. Sounds like they've done a lot of work in the site.
Mm-hmm. And they've also, the people behind it have done other music websites.
Got it. All right. Well, I've got a website to share too.
Okay.
Zillow.com. Zillow.com. This is so cool.
It rhymes with pillow?
Rhymes with pillow.
Okay.
So it combines Google Maps with realestate.com, and what you can actually do is you can zoom into a neighborhood and you can see the map of all the houses and the assessed value of all the houses on a block. You should do this with your new block. It's really, really cool. Actually, it's not, I don't know where they get their data.
Yeah, I was going to
exactly.
say, there
I don't
you
know.
Go.
I don't know. It's not assessments by the cities, but it's market price, however they define it.
Wow.
So it's,
that is interesting.
It may not be absolutely correct, but relatively, there's probably a lot of value in it. And it is really cool. I looked at my neighborhood, and it's like, at one glance, I can see what they think the market value is on every house.
Did they do your own, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And do you agree with it? Where do you think that came from?
I think it's a little bit high.
Or are you going to sue them because it's wrong?
I'm going to start a class action suit
against them.
I think the good news is it's a little bit higher than what I think my house is. I mean, it's only an idea, I guess, and I don't know how they get the data. But nevertheless, it's kind of a cool emerging of technologies. And for those of you in the housing market or have uh-huh. a house, it's worth spending the 2 minutes to go.
Zillow.
Go to Zillow.com and check it out.
Did you see the Forbes list of top dead celebrities that
just came out? No.
Well, Elvis is number one. He made $50 million last year. And actually, number two was Albert Einstein. He made about $20 million, even though he's been dead for more than 50 years. And
How did he make money, do you think?
Most of Albert's royalties come from the Disney line of Baby Einstein toys and videos. Isn't that interesting? they generated $400 million in sales last year, so he got his take. And then also his image is used on things, like you'll see him on, you know, glasses and whatever, and
right.
posters. And
he's a handsome guy.
And they make money from that. But so I've been dead 50 years, and actually I wanted to talk at some point about science, so we'll save that for next time. But
okay.
Think about famous scientists.
Dead or alive, or both?
Alive.
All right.
Think how many you can name. Because the premise of what I'd like to talk about next.
Well, that's good. You know, Pat always liked to talk about scientists, so this will go right into our Jeff and Pat stuff.
Oh, okay.
Well.
Good.
I just
My
thought,
name's Gretchen, by the way.
I just thought that was interesting. All right. I'm gonna end with one quick note, an observation. I don't have an answer for this, but why is green tea yellow? Every time I've had green tea anywhere, when I've made it myself, when I've had it at a restaurant, it's always yellow. I just leave you with that thought. I'd like to know the answer to it.
When how does a tea bag stay together? Have you thought about that? You ever taken one apart?
No, I haven't.
What keeps it together?
Why would it fall apart?
Why
glue?
Would it?
Glue yeah. keeps it together, doesn't it?
No. So you drink glue every time you drink TV?
No, the glue doesn't dissolve. It's special glue. I don't know. I don't know.
I always thought that was interesting.
All right.
Too bad.
But we will count on our listeners to get answers to those two questions. And with that, we are out of here. We're going to get the air conditioning back on.
Good night.
All right. Good night.